Did you know nearly one-third of supplement consumers in the U.S. are unsatisfied with the current immune-supporting drinks on the market? Help your consumers get the products they want with Immuse, the novel, clinically researched postbiotic that activates our body's natural defenses at the cellular level for year-round immune support. Formulate with the immune health ingredients backed by 30-plus research studies. Learn more at immusehealth.com. That's Immuse, I-M-M-U-S-E, health.com.
Hey folks, I'm Ray Latif, and you're listening to the top podcast for the food and beverage industry, Taste Radio. This is episode 222, which features an interview with Hollywood actress and best-selling author Gabrielle Union, Maggie Patton, and Alex Buckley, the co-founders of better-for-you kids snack brand Bitsies. Just a reminder to our listeners, if you like what you hear on Taste Radio, please share the podcast with friends and colleagues. And of course, we'd love it if you could review us on the Apple Podcasts app or your listening platform of choice. They say necessity is the mother of invention. Sometimes inventions are created by mothers who saw an unfilled necessity. That's the case with Bitsies, a brand of organic vegetable-infused kid snacks, including cookies and crackers. Launched by social entrepreneurs Maggie Patton and Alex Buckley in 2012, the company's mission is to make healthy and nutritious snacks accessible and affordable to all families. In May, Bitsies announced that actress Gabrielle Union, who has long been an admirer and customer of the brand, had joined the company as its third co-founder and will have an active role in sales, marketing, and product development. In the following interview, Nosh editor Carol Ortenberg spoke with the co-founders about the history and evolution of the brand, which recently picked up placement at 1,600 CVS stores nationwide. As part of their conversation, they discussed Gabrielle's interest in joining the company and alignment with Maggie and Alex, how they communicate the brand's healthy halo to kids and parents, why asking for help has to be a priority for entrepreneurs, and how the food industry can work together to mainstream healthy food for kids.
Hi guys, Carol here. I'm the editor of Nosh, and today we're going to chat with Alex Buckley, Maggie Patton, and Gabrielle Union, who are the co-founders of the fantastic snack brand Bitsies. Guys, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Thanks for having us.
So I wanted to start by having you guys introduce what Bitsies is and your roles of the company.
So at Bitsies, our mission is to make products that create a healthier and more thoughtful and inclusive world for kids. So we're really focused on making healthy, allergen-free, affordable, and accessible food for kids.
Amazing. And now you guys are all co-founders. How do you kind of divide things up? Do different folks focus on different aspects of the business?
We're a small brand still, so everyone is very involved in lots of the different little aspects. We're all wearing many different hats at any given time, and I would say we work very collaboratively on everything. It's probably apropos for the time that we're in right now, but Bitsies is a very in-it-together company, I think because we really started it out of a shared passion around children and around this need for really creating better products for them and putting kids first in the grocery aisle. So there's obviously a lot of different facets to running a food company. So we do divide and conquer where we can, but often find ourselves in a very collaborative setting.
Kind of sounds like a family a little bit.
Absolutely.
So Maggie, Alex, you guys didn't start off as food entrepreneurs. What made you want to start a kids food brand? Where did you see the white space on the shelf?
Well, Alex and I, as you know, we started our careers in nonprofit together, working with children. And I think anyone that works on social issues can find after a period of time that sometimes you don't feel like you're making the full systemic impact and change that you want to. A lot of times you feel like you're putting a band-aid on a problem. And in many ways, it feels like business is a different approach in a way that maybe you can change things for the long term. So that was really what inspired us, this desire of like, can we really tackle this problem around food? And a feeling that we could do that by building a business that was not just about profit, not just about putting the, you know, the Band-Aid, but actually how can we really look at the issues, look at the need and opportunity and create products that solve that problem?
That's amazing. And Gabrielle, you're a mom as well. You're a recent addition to the company. Was this a challenge you kind of faced yourself as a mom and identified a need?
Well, you know, I had sort of discovered, you know, Bitsy's organically a while back, and the kids loved it and the adults really loved it. And so it had been in our pantry. And because Bitsy's, you know, on a mind level, we're, you know, super in sync in that the brand stands for something. And on a body level, it's a product you can feel good about feeding your family. But on a super personal level, being from North Omaha, where there is, you know, there are plenty of food deserts, just understanding how, while my own family, you know, due to geography and socioeconomics, we don't have trouble finding healthy snacks, but the rest of my family, the majority of whom live, you know, in food deserts, finding healthy snacks that are affordable is a huge challenge. And that's where I really wanted to jump in and, you know, work with the ladies and try to bring, you know, these amazing products that I can get super easy to as many people as possible.
I love that. And I definitely want to circle back around to the topic of food accessibility. But one of the things that I've always loved about the brand is that upfront, you guys really talk about the vegetables, and you're not hiding the fact that this is a healthy food with some secret ingredients. You're not really too coy about that. Why was that important to you to really clearly state that?
That's a great question. I think that Maggie and I have always felt, and Gabrielle shares this feeling, that, you know, so often we market to kids as though they are not taking in everything that we say. So often we don't treat them as the really intelligent human beings that they are. And we kind of wonder, why does every kid's product, you know, have to be marketed as, you know, a double stuffed chocolate swirl, when really, you know, kids are smart and they want to learn about healthy foods and they want to learn how to nourish their bodies and minds. And so why aren't we kind of teaching them that and teaching them to embrace healthy foods from the start?
You know, starting with Kavya James, my 1.5-year-old, she was like a bit of an experiment, if you will, in terms of trying to introduce different foods to her really, really early. And being very clear and cognizant decisions about not demonizing vegetables and not demonizing healthy foods and not feeling like, you know, vegetables are something you have to hide, and presenting vegetables as a treat. And, you know, from a very early age, the things that she craves and reaches for and looks at as like a special treat are all actually healthy for her. So we're trying to introduce, you know, vegetables very early in a positive way, sort of, you know, how it seemed like kale hired a publicist. And it was like, how is kale everywhere? Like, everyone wants kale. That's how we really want to approach vegetables and healthier options, and not demonize them and make kids and parents feel like vegetables are something that need to be hidden in order to be consumed. We want people, and especially young kids, the earlier the better, to crave vegetables and to look at vegetables as a fun treat.
So why not make like a kale cracker then, or, you know, dehydrated carrot sticks? Where's that balance between introducing kids to vegetables and still making something that's accessible? How did you guys approach product innovation?
Well, we still might make that, Carol.
I was going to say, I'm like, don't threaten us with a good time.
Come on now.
You might be joining our next innovation team meeting. So I think, you know, we try to be in a place of reality with what we're doing too. And we just know more than a quarter of kids' daily calories come from snacks. So looking at the snack category and saying, where can we do a bit better? I think sometimes, you know, it's not the journey to perfection. It's also a journey within where you are, and just being honest about that, you know. And I mean, a lot of people are eating a lot of packaged snacks, and a lot of kids are eating a lot of packaged snacks. So we've looked at where the opportunity is to really make improvements, where we can still have a taste profile that is exciting for people and that the kids are familiar with and love eating, and snackability is huge. So that's really how we've kind of chosen our product categories. Also convenience. Again, we're all moms, so we got to be able to grab it and go with it.
Mike, I heard you're starting a beverage company.
Ray, let's say I was. Do you have any suggestions for a complete partner?
Absolutely. Ingredion. Ingredion is a leading global plant-based ingredient solutions provider to the food and beverage industry with a diverse portfolio, including sweeteners and sugar reduction technologies, plant-based proteins, starches, and hydrocolloids.
Of course. Ingredients 360 Value Framework delivers value according to your brand's specific needs through consumer well-being, environmental impact, and value creation. Ingredients market research and insights for innovation can help uncover opportunities within the beverage space. For instance, figuring out what added health benefits consumers need. They have a network of technical experts that will help you solve your pain points to get you to market faster. With Ingredient, you gain a partner who helps you deliver the total beverage experience that keeps consumers coming back.
To learn more about Ingredient, head to tasteradio.com/beverage.
Meet one-to-one with buyers from Whole Foods Market, GoPuff, and Lowe's Foods at BevNet Live on June 12th and 13th in New York City. To be considered for a retail meeting, register for the two-day event at BevNetLive.com.
The New Beverage Showdown returns to BevNet Live in New York City on June 12th and 13th. Pitch your beverage startup in front of a panel of expert judges, our live audience, and viewers tuning into the live stream. To learn more, visit BevNetLive.com.
So when you brought this innovative product to buyers in the very beginning, what was the response to your marketing approach, your points of differentiation, and your targeting of kids as a consumer?
One interesting thing in sort of the journey of the early conversations with retailers was they didn't even really know what to do with us when we said this is for kids and not for babies. Mm-hmm. And the whole conversation around actually focusing food on kids, it's to us, it seemed so logical and obvious. And as you know, we were coming from nonprofits. So off we go to our first trade show and people come to the booth and we're like, it's kids. And everyone's like, there's no kids, you know, and that hadn't really even occurred to us. But when we were first starting the company, we were like, well, of course there needs to be kids, you know, but of course someone wants to have the conversation about kids. And I think what's exciting right now is that we're at this point of inflection with our company, and Gab has come on board with us, and people are actually excited to have the conversation about kids all of a sudden. And I don't know, you know, exactly what sent everyone to that place of readiness for it, but there is an openness and a receptivity to this conversation. And it's obviously, I mean, long overdue, and kids are the worst indexing population in terms of health in America. And so it's kind of crazy that we haven't really had a collective focus in our food system on improving this for them to date.
And when we're talking about kids and health outcomes, what age are you targeting, and what age, you know, comprises this kid set in the grocery store?
Well, a lot of times when we talk about it, we say kids from 1 to 101, because, you know, in a way, we also feel like for our food, we're a family food brand. If you can't snack on it with your kid, it's going to be a problem. So it's really, I mean, our sweet spot, I would say, is really like 2 to 12, you know, once a child can really eat independently.
Yeah. I mean, usually you don't have the time or the shelf space to have 1,000 different snacks. So it's ideal to have a snack that appeals to children as well as adults. And I think we've hit a really sweet spot in achieving that. And where we're planning to go, you know, with our innovation is really going to sort of broaden that and be able to be really competitive with other nameless, less healthy snacks while still delivering great taste, you know, allergen-free, affordable, school-safe snacks. That's like the ultimate goal, right?
When you guys are thinking about packaging or marketing, yes, you're targeting kids, but let's be honest, kids don't have the largest pocketbooks themselves necessarily. So you're also trying to talk to their parents as well or guardians. So how do you kind of divide your messaging and marketing to appeal to both?
We do really try to speak to everyone on our packaging. And I won't say that that's just an easy thing to do, but I think because we're focused on honesty and transparency and really creating conversations while snacking, we always say like kind of cut out the mindless eating, but we involve kids in the creation of our products. If you look at our good cookies, all of the sayings that are on each cookie, the positive messages actually came from children. So there's that piece. We also survey parents, talk to parents extensively. We really try to get equal input into the creation of our products and into the branding in terms of them resonating. And, you know, there's an ability to resonate with children and adults that you can capture. I even think about like how much my daughter loves Gab, you know, just from having seen her, and things. And when you ask her why, like when we were first starting this journey together, what she said to me really struck me and was like very meaningful to me, which she was like, she's just so real, you know? And I think that that is a perfect kind of compliment and explanation too, to what we're trying to do with Bitsy's is like Bitsy's is a brand where, I mean, Bitsy's is about love. Bitsy's is like, we love you through this product. Like, we love your family. We're going to do better by you than what others have done before. And we're going to put everything we can behind that. And we're going to be real and honest about it. And so that's kind of who we are.
I love how you described that. And it's great that you mentioned Gabrielle joining. Talk to me about that process and how you guys all came together and knew that this was the right addition to your little snacking family.
Well, we really came together because of a shared heart. I mean, I feel like, and just a shared total love of kids and wanting to do better and really throw ourselves into that. And the kind of nitty gritty story, I guess, of how it actually happened is kind of a great story too, because it's, you know, a friend from our nonprofit days who she became one of my best friends, saw our stuff one day at a Wegmans and posted it on Instagram. And next thing, another mutual mom friend between Gab and us saw it, whose daughter was a huge fan of the brand. And she was buying it often because her daughter had an anaphylactic nut allergy. And she introduced us to Gab. And the conversation started there. And I'll let you jump in, Gab.
Yeah, we were just really in sync in terms of our goals in life and our goals for, you know, how we want to create products that children are going to consume and, you know, really wanting to address childhood obesity. And for me, it's like, there's nothing I want to present on any of my platforms that feel elitist or exclusionary. And there's nothing worse than seeing a comment. Well, it's like, well, where can I get that? And it's like, ooh, nowhere where you live, or well, how much is that? And it's like, oh, that's really expensive. And just wanting to create really, really healthy products that are accessible to everyone and affordable to the masses, and to really sort of do some unlearning of some of the harmful marketing tactics that have been used to target Black and Brown children and marginalized communities, and really pushing unhealthy snacks, you know, into the most vulnerable communities, and understanding that for marginalized communities and families of color, all of our goals are actually in line for what we want for our families. We want to raise, you know, the happiest, healthiest kids that we can. And a lot of times we just really lack access to those products. And I wanted to come on to really focus on inclusion and innovation, but really zero in on affordability and access. But there, I mean, how can you not love Maggie and Alice? So we were, you know, I just sort of fell in love with them. I love their background in nonprofit. I love, you know, sort of what they stand for and what Bitsy stands for. And it was a really organic combining and melding of the minds. And I'm just really excited about where it's all going to go and getting to talk to more people like you and, you know, go to those, well, whenever the world opens back up, those trade shows and being on sales pitches and visiting production sites and just really opening up as many people, you know, that kind of tune in or check in on my various platforms and expose everything that we are doing with this brand and our movement really to as many people as possible.
That's really resonates with me. I grew up in New Orleans, which is a city that struggled with food accessibility for a long time now. So let's talk about that. You know, I think a lot of brands in the industry want to make healthy products and their hearts are in the right place, but they aren't always able to get them into the hands of people that need it most. So what are you guys doing to try to improve the accessibility of Bitsy's?
We worked really hard to lower the price. That was a major, major focus point because there's no point in getting the product in, you know, CVS, which we were really, you know, which we were successful in doing, getting Bitsy's into, was it 1600 CVS's? If it was just too expensive still. So, you know, kind of figuring out how to get it into more mainstream stores that are in a lot of communities and getting the price down so that people can actually afford to enjoy it.
I love that you mentioned price, but for small brands, that can be difficult at times, especially when you're starting out and having to buy smaller batches of ingredients. Do either of you have advice on how to balance mission and business at the same time? You know, how did you do this from the beginning? And what can small emerging brands take away and maybe implement at their own company?
So we come from nonprofit and we are not afraid to ask. You know, I will say that has been like the greatest skill that translated surprisingly into going into food is just fearlessly asking and being honest and asking for help. I mean, and I think, you know, if you spend your career in the not-for-profit sector, you literally are a professional asker of help and resources, and you do it unabashedly. And like you said, it is really hard to be a small brand and an innovator and trying to do these things and balancing mission and sourcing ingredients in a smaller batch can be expensive. We are not going to solve these problems as individual brands. This really has to be retailers who come together with you and see what you're trying to do and see your authenticity and heart. The saying that we always said at our nonprofit was love is our strategy. Love is a strategy. And I have to say that is our biggest advice is like we ask and we try to get people to come together with us and do some things that can make it possible. So whether it's, you know, you hit a challenge and a roadblock with something, just not being afraid to say, look, like we can't pay that charge. We can't just, you know, we're a small women-owned brand. We are bringing these different things to you. How can you meet us halfway here? Look, it's the world too. Like we've got to ask and we've got to listen and respond and find ways to problem solve together. You know, I don't know, very challenging for adults. We all need to like go back to kindergarten with the kids with our snacks, but I think it's problem solving together.
I think asking for help can sometimes be scary, though, and not something we're all familiar with in this Instagram age where it's all about, look at me, look how great things are. So how, any tips on getting comfortable with asking for help?
So I think asking for help, I mean, you know what, this is something I feel like we're all trying to teach our kids too. I just think you have to open your heart up and not be afraid of failure. I mean, maybe it's also that. I think somehow like starting a company, you sort of have to say failure's not an option. And if you are in a place where you're saying failure's not an option, it makes you willing to, you know, find a way where there's a will, there's a way. I can go on with these sayings all day, but, and now I'm rhyming. but, no, I just think
multi-talented.
I don't know. Gab and Alex, how do you guys both ask for help?
I just do it. I think I entered my 40s and I had to leave fear of judgment, of looking weak or not as smart as, or not as, you know, savvy as, you know, the next person. I had to leave that behind. Now I'm just really transparent when I don't know something and I humble myself. And part of asking for help is embracing humility. And I've found that I have raced ahead way farther than I ever thought I'd be by humbling myself and being transparent, painfully transparent at times, when I don't know something or I need help. And people, especially when you lead with humility and being transparent about where you're actually at, are more than happy to help. But I think sometimes we have to get out of our own way.
I couldn't agree more. And you may end up cutting this, but I think there's something too about women, perhaps, that makes that act of being willing to be vulnerable. I think perhaps for some of us, it comes a little bit more naturally. Maybe that's the wrong way to frame it. But I do think there's so much power in vulnerability and in humility. Luckily, I think that's something that we are really all on the same page.
I completely agree with you. And I think that's why we've seen a lot of discussion recently about why companies should strive to have a diverse set of employees, because everyone brings different skills to the table, whether that's vulnerability or not. But it's interesting that you mentioned that with being a female-owned business, because I sometimes hear from some female-owned companies that it's even harder to express vulnerability because there are so few of them. They feel like they have to be tougher or, you know, appear a certain way. And that's an interesting balance to strike.
I get that too. I really do. But I think for us, for whatever reason, our power has always been in this sort of this ability to say, you know, can you help? How can we come together?
Mike, I was just in the kitchen and I saw this really cool THC-infused beverage brand called Eighth Wonder.
Ah, chill brand. They make cannabis bevs as well as beer and spirits. The product you're talking about is a super tasty cherry limeade cannabis seltzer called Lil Bit. And did you know Eighth Wonder was acquired last year by Houston's BioCity Hemp?
Yes, I did. That deal created a world-class, vertically integrated cannabis and craft beverage company. Bayou's science-based processes for extracting THC from hemp have made the company the gold standard for cannabis products across Texas and beyond.
Bayou's cannabis portfolio includes Eighth Wonder as well as Howdy and Beach Break, all of which are distributed throughout Texas and Louisiana.
You can learn more about all these brands at eighthwonder.com, siphowdy.com, and sipbeachbreak.com.
On June 12th and 13th in New York City, hear from Icelandic Glacial, Lemon Perfect, GoPuff, Sachet, Diageo Ventures, and Lowe's Foods during the leading event for the beverage industry. Save on BevNet Live tickets through April 26th. Just visit bevnetlive.com.
That asking for help and showing vulnerability coming from a place of love seems to have gotten you guys very far. You have some amazing distribution. Talk to me about how you got those accounts almost at the inception of Bitsy's. I think you were in Target already. What was kind of your channel strategy and how did you get into those retailers?
I think with sort of creating a new category with the kid conversation, it honestly has depended on who the buyer is and how into this idea they are. Do they get it? Do they get what we're trying to accomplish? And do they have this shared point of view and passion around children and wanting to do better? And I think that's one of the real challenges in this space is if your buyer really loves what you're about and you're part of their vision too with what they're trying to create within that set, I think that, you know, obviously the door is open. And, you know, buyers change a lot. So I think there's a lot of ups and downs in the journey because of that, because there hasn't been an existing kids category. And this has been a relatively new conversation that we've been really trying to start. So it's been really important and really special when we've had those people that have championed our brand and have wanted to see something like this happen. And I think maybe that's one of the things about an idea is, like, you know, often an idea is not just your own. It's something that other people are thinking about at the same time, especially if the need is real. And I think that has been kind of what has lent itself to our journey so far. And I believe very much that more people now than ever kind of have this idea around kids, that it's percolating to the top. Look, there's going to be some people who get it more than others and really get on board. And those are your champions. And, you know, we all need those champions, whatever it is we're trying to tackle with whatever business or personal goals. There's really both sides in all of our journeys. It's no different in business than it is in life. You know, it's just you work hard to win people over by really sharing your why and giving the data, the facts around why this is important and where it's going to make a difference. It's a long game. You know, I think changing children's wellness and health and getting people to a place where, you know, we're mainstreaming healthier options, going up against a lot of other products that have a lot of power and a lot of money behind them. It's a journey, and it takes continuous effort, I think. So like I said, I mean, I think any startup has its ups and downs, and you have your moments where someone really gets it and you're just like, yes, you know, and then you have your moments where you have to work a little harder, but you just keep going, you know, and those are, and then when you get that person on your side and they get it too, it's even better.
What do we have to do as an industry, do you think, to help mainstream healthy foods?
This is like a really has to be an all-in, full circle approach in partnership with retailers, in partnership with distributors, in partnership with brands. When we're designing our planograms, when the industry is looking at planograms and looking at its store and looking at shelf space, saying, look, I'm going to designate this percentage of shelf space to products that meet these metrics and these mission-driven goals, prioritizing that, you know, setting maybe some different hurdles and giving brands time to grow within those hurdles and to catch on and the story to be told and trial to take place. I mean, I think that's one of the challenging things in the food space is that there's always, you know, innovation and, you know, maybe one day kale has the publicist and the next day cauliflower has a publicist. And so sometimes it's like, okay, what is the hot new thing? And like, let's churn through different brands. I think that there really has to be a focus again on sustained shelf space for mission-driven brands that are trying to achieve shared goals that make an impact, whether that impact is around children's health or in other issue areas that we're looking at in food. But yeah, I think it has to be a partnership where people and retailers specifically say, look, we're going to come together with you. We're going to give a focal area in our store so that, you know, the first thing people see when they're walking down the aisle is not this giant snacktopia of unhealthy, but maybe it's the snacktopia of healthy instead, that normally would cost X amount, you know, from a big brand to invest in that across a retailer, maybe looking at retailer X and they're giving away whatever money through their foundation that year towards children's wellness, maybe look at putting it into sponsoring their own end cap around children's wellness or something like that. I mean, I think it's a space for collaborative and problem-solving thinking to come together.
Yeah, we always say it's a perfect marriage between marketing, availability, and affordability. You know, to make anything mainstream in any industry, if it's not marketed to everyone, that target audience that you know you're missing, then you've failed, right? If you're not taking into account the people who've been historically, you know, and categorically not marketed to, and you're not addressing that actively and consistently, then you're already failing. If you're trying to make something mainstream and the price is sort of being held up as, you know, health and wellness should never feel like a luxury item, right? So if the price isn't there, it's not going to be mainstream because the vast majority of your consumers, you know, are not super wealthy and they live, you know, in areas where if these products aren't in your regular, you know, stores at a price point that's competitive with more unhealthy snacks, then you're not going to be, you know, mainstream that way either. And just trying to get these products into as many stores that are available in every community and really sort of destigmatizing healthy snacks as something that's only for a select few. Because I think a lot of people talk about wanting things to be mainstream. And if you were to ask, you know, if it was a question on Family Feud and you asked 100 people on the street, people would be like, what? What is that? So then you know, okay, perhaps mainstream wasn't actually my goal. Maybe mainstream was just a talking point. So you're going to need name and message cohesion with your average person, where they recognize, you know, the Bitsy's logo, they recognize the Bitsy's packaging, they know what we stand for, and it's clear, you know, and obvious that we have put our mission statement and our goals are in alignment with marketing, affordability, and accessibility. And that's really the only way you're going to make anything mainstream.
I love that trio of targets that you're aiming for, but let's talk about marketing. It's a hard time to be a food brand right now because less people are shopping in stores. When they're kind of in stores, it's get in and get out as fast as possible. How are you trying to reach these new customers who maybe weren't aware of Bitsy's or couldn't afford it before you were able to lower your price?
It was funny because, you know, I was watching the fruit snack challenge on social media and I was like, well, Cobb doesn't, she doesn't really know what those are, but she knows what Bitsy's are. And so let's try to do the snack challenge with the snacks that Kavya James, who has 1.3 million Instagram followers, and I have 16.2 million Instagram followers. Let's post this snack challenge with Kav. And when we do the metrics for who's following me, I am reaching some communities that have traditionally not been marketed to. And it was a simple, fun social media challenge. And immediately, I think, you know, on one site, like Kav's video had been watched 2 million times and her page had been like hundreds of thousands of times. But it was an easy, organic way to get a message out about our products. And immediately you see the comments, you know, where do I get Bitsy's and how many products are there and where can we find this? Is it really tasty? And it was you have to sometimes think outside the box in these crazy times. And it was something that was largely successful and picked up by every major media outlet. And it was just my daughter eating the snacks that she loves. And sometimes you don't need a bazillion dollar marketing budget when, you know, the proof is actually in the Bitsy's.
Well, it helps when you have a star of the video who is quite adorable. I'll say that much.
She loves her Bitsy's. Okay.
Well, I love all the goals you're trying to accomplish. Talk to us about what the future of Bitsy's looks like. What is your goal and what would your dream be for the brand?
I think the dream is to see Bitsy's being offered in schools across the country, being available in stores across the country, in every community, and having that brand recognition in every home and positioning Bitsy's as thought leaders, innovators, and well ahead of the curve in terms of marrying our message to our mission.
Well, Alex, Maggie, Gabrielle, I am so excited to see what the future holds for Bitsy's and continue to help spreading the news about your goals to mainstream healthy eating. Thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you so much for having us.
That brings us to the end of episode 222. Thank you for listening, and thanks to our guests, Gabrielle Union, Maggie Patton, and Alex Buckley. As always, for questions, comments, ideas for future podcasts, please send us an email to ask@tasteradio.com. On behalf of the entire Taste Radio team, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.